Live from Burbank, California, home of Clint Howard, star of Gentle Ben, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now his life is bordered by trash cans and alleyways. Mark Maron!
All right, good evening, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you, people? I hope you had a good weekend. You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150. You can blog with us. The party has started at markmarcmarin.com. Call us at 877-520-1150. How are you, Jim? How was your weekend? Be honest with me.
I'm great. You know, it was very exhausting. We had a lot of moving to do.
Oh, that's a great story.
Unpacking.
Oh, that's tremendous.
You didn't give me a chance.
Were there any...
I know this show is so jam-packed with content, but you can't give me a chance to even elaborate on it? Story?
Collect your thoughts. Tonight, we have comedian Jeffrey Ross, and also we have music columnist for the New York Times, Jeff Leeds. He's a deep dude. He knows everything about music, and I got some questions that's going to come off of our Oscar discussion in a minute. Now let's get back to those boxes, mister.
Yeah, I just unpacked boxes. What more do you want?
Wow, that was it? That was the big setup? Yeah. I gave you a few minutes to collect your thoughts. That's what we get?
Yeah. What am I? Your encyclopedia of knowledge?
I wish. I wish you could help me in that way. But what I want to know, did you have one of those moments where you opened a box and said, oh, my God, this thing. I've been looking for this thing. Or one of these moments, oh, my God, I haven't seen this since I was in high school.
Yeah, I opened one box. There was a human head in it.
Oh, wow.
Human
Thank
head.
God. Thank. I don't even know where to go with that. Nice. Great. That's terrific. Haven't seen Mom in years. Great. Good news.
I'm going to tag that one more time.
That's hilarious. Why don't you tag it one more time and make it a funny one? How would that be? Come on. Let's fight, bastard.
I'm not getting paid enough for that.
All right, folks. Let me reach out. I want to personally congratulate Cindy Sheehan today on getting arrested again. This time she was at the U.S. mission to the U.N., where she was with a delegation of women consisting of about 20 protesters and Cindy and three others. They were all attempting to deliver a petition with more than 60,000 signatures demanding the withdrawal of troops from Iraq. When no one would meet them, Jim, at the U.S. mission to the U.N., she decided with these other women to sit down and just wait, and they were arrested. This is classic nonviolent sit-in protest. This is a courageous act, and she is the real deal, folks. We've talked to her before. I love Cindy Sheehan. When you're around her, you just want her to be your mom. I swear to God, I felt that. She's got such a magnanimous kind of maternal personality. I really respect what she does, and she continues to make the opposition to this war a human fact for all of us, and getting arrested is part and parcel in the life of a nonviolent activist in this country or any other country. This type of resistance is a powerful example to all of us who don't go out and sit in front of the UN, but sit at home screaming at our televisions, which is protest, but not as effective a protest, I would say. You know what I did coming in the building? This is a weird moment. You know what I did? Is there something singing somewhere? Is there a phone singing? Is there somebody's phone on? I was walking into the building, Jim.
Yes.
Walking into the building, and it's raining out here in Los Angeles, and I am picking up snails and moving them out of the way of harm. Picking up little snails that come out of the ground, and they're big here, and I'm moving them out of the way of harm. I don't know what that says about me or whether I think I care about the snails.
Heather was doing that.
She was?
Yeah.
See, I think me and your girlfriend have a similar type of thinking, perhaps. But you know what I thought, though, right after that, and this is in honor of you, is as I was picking up snails, I'm like, well, why am I eating meat again? Why do I eat fish? If I care this much, just because it's one step removed, I don't care enough not to eat it? That's what I had. I had a little pang of
tuna.
Ex-vegetarian guilt, my friend.
Tuna tainted, mercury.
All right, let's not get into that. I was dealing with the strict organic respect for other life forms, and I don't want to get into the toxins right now, but I know you're right, and I'm not going to argue with you on that. Patton Oswalt got me all freaked out today, shoots me an email. Now, I've avoided this stuff. I have avoided the documentaries on 9/11. I've avoided the documentaries that say that it was all on purpose, it was a cruise missile, that there were bombs within the buildings that brought them down. But he sent me this new version of a documentary that's been out there for a while, and I spent the morning watching it. And look, I am willing to accuse the neocon death cult as being complicit through negligence in allowing that horrible thing, that disaster, that tragedy to happen. But I have been a little skeptical as to say it is a conspiracy theory to the extent that this documentary does. But I got to tell you something. I'm sitting there in front of this computer going, I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't know. So now I'm immersed in independent speculative investigation on my own. I'll give you the website to that documentary so you can all freak out if you haven't done that already. If you haven't really looked into the conspiracy that could be 9/11, I'll get you involved with that in just a few minutes. I already said who our guests are going to be right now. I'd like to bring this up. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you caught up on you're caught up on current events there before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. Federal health officials say a second vaccine for bird flu is being developed to help combat the rapidly mutating virus. Like most diseases, this one seems to be spread by diseased peckers. The Supreme Court ruled unanimously that colleges accepting federal funds must allow military recruiters on campus. Chief Justice John Roberts, writing for the court, said that the campus visits are an effective military recruiting tool and that after 3 years in Iraq, the Army's running out of high school dropouts. Ratings for last night's Oscar telecast dropped 10% from last year, making it the second least watched Oscar night ever. ABC and the Academy still feel they did okay on the 10% loss because compared to last year's host, Jon Stewart is 30% smaller. The ratings are so low that the Oscars are changing their name to the Mark Maron Show. That's a good one. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. Tremendous. That's great. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate that.
You just threw that at me, that crumpled piece of
paper.
Only
you and I will understand why. Speaking of Oscars, my friend, you're wondering who this attractive woman is in the room. First things first, we're going to talk to our entertainment reporter, who is new to the reporting racket, but an old hand at entertaining. She works as a prostitute here in Hollywood. Welcome to the Mark Maron Show, Svetlana Svetlmuskich.
It's okay, Mark. It's okay.
How do you pronounce it?
It's Svetlana Maksimovich.
Okay, good.
You look very, very hot today.
Well, thank you very much.
The blazer is very feisty.
I appreciate it. I'm doing a whole tweed thing.
It's a hot tweed.
Oh, thank you.
Tweed,
yes. Professorial, I think. So now you were at the Academy Awards.
I was, yes.
And
yes.
You don't have, you're not a regular reporter. How'd you get into the Academy Awards?
Well, basically, a lot of Zia's producers and directors are former clients from Petersburg House of Discreet Pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
As you recall. I mean, I'm not saying you were there, but you know about the existence.
I've heard I had friends with this down in the Fairfax
friends
District,
of friends.
Right?
It's near Fairfax, near the African American.
All right, we'll send people to your website when we get done here.
Please
so,
do.
What was your overall impression of the ceremonies, I guess you would call them?
Well, it was an interesting night. I was sitting in back, so I could see back of heads and lots of buttocks,
I know,
and it was very
feels,
exciting,
yeah.
Yes. A lot of surprises.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was shocked, like many people in the audience. Wallace and Gromit beating out Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah.
Outrage. I'm kidding. I don't give a crap.
Outrage.
I don't give a crap about cartoons. It's unbelievable.
I don't either.
Who cares?
Yeah, it was so why were you getting so what was outrageous about? Just that they were awarding cartoons at all?
Well, yes. Yes, I think it's not to be Academy Award.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about other winners. How about Best Actor? Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's a very talented guy.
Yeah.
He reminds me of a dolphin. He looks like a dolphin, maybe Piglet, but more dolphin. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I don't know, but he always looks like he just touched himself in the bathroom and was ushered out before he had time to finish. You know, he has it bubbling up inside.
He kind of does have that.
He does that look. He's like about to explode. I can't tell. He can't tell if he's straight. I know he has a girlfriend in New York, but you can't tell. He's one of those interesting androgynous.
But he's a sweet guy. Do you get that impression that he's a sweet guy?
No. No, I get more of a pervert. But it's okay. I have good eye for this. But this is not your department.
How about Reese Witherspoon, best actress?
Reese Witherspoon. She looked little skinny. Her husband looks 15 years old. He had big acne.
Yeah, he did.
Did you see? Get cover, Steve. Revlon, $2.99. Let's save one. Yeah, I don't understand.
Exactly. You're a celebrity. Cover that stuff.
Cover stick. It takes 2 seconds.
Didn't he look jealous and resentful as well?
He looked bitter. Yeah. He looked bitter. He looked bored.
Yeah.
He looked bored and bitter. But she's okay. She's a little, I don't want to say fakey-fakey.
Uh-huh.
Little fakey-fakey.
Really? Celebrity being fakey-fakey.
Yeah,
imagine
I'm
that.
Surprised.
Yeah,
I'm surprised.
So George Clooney, you got to love George
Clooney. George Clooney is too perfect. He's boring. Let's move on.
Okay. How about Rachel Weisz?
Her name, you know, her name is spelled like old Polish spelling.
Sure, sure.
Which I really respect. Mm-hmm. If Hollywood told me, Svetlana, change your last name for Svetlana Schnirzniest, I said no.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Only if they pay me, but that's a different story.
And hence, that's why you're in the profession you're in and not...
Exactly.
Okay,
prostitution.
Good. Yes.
Good business.
Yeah, sure.
Rachel Weisz, I like, but she looks bitchy.
She does.
She's one of those girls that in high school made fun of you and made you give oral pleasure to boys in the bathroom to feel accepted.
Oh,
do you know
what
I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about, which frightens me.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're a recipient or giver. That's a different conversation.
Yeah, it is a different conversation. Maybe we can have it off the air.
Maybe.
Now, how about... So you're foreign, yes?
I am foreign, so yes, indeed.
Does the foreign film...
I am American citizen, though. I am American citizen, and I'm patriotic.
Now, how'd you become American citizen, exactly?
Well, mail order.
Oh, okay.
This guy from Detroit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you still
Stewart.
Talk to him? Or
Well, it's okay. We have a prenup, so he said, you know what, forget it.
So did you, what about the foreign film? What about the best
foreign film? Well, you know, I like the guy, the androgynous black boy film, Van, from South Africa, right? Uh-huh. The guy who looks like a donut. I can't tell, but the shirt, Tutsi. And it's okay. I was just happy Paradise Now, not Vienna. I'll tell you why. Mark, you know me. Well, yeah. Maybe you don't, but you're learning.
Yeah.
I have no problem with showing a movie of suicide bomber if you don't make him sympathetic. You know, as you know, there's answers better than violence. I don't care if you are occupied and your sewage system is primitive.
Yeah.
You don't have to go blow up, right?
Right. Yeah,
okay.
I agree with that.
But I'm so happy that the Palestinian people are realizing this now, choosing the peace-loving Hamas to really rule their country. It's very promising. I'm going to be sick. I really am going to be sick.
Now, okay, Ang Lee, best director.
Ang Lee,
great
very,
movie.
Very happy they give Oriental Oscar.
Yeah.
Very happy. Oriental, it's nice. He's gentle. Not a client.
Yeah.
Not a client.
I wouldn't
Interesting.
Think so.
Well, Asians, not for me. Not for them.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. You know, who knows?
It's at least it goes both ways. That's what's important.
My one breast is bigger than others. They like everything very uniform.
Yeah, okay.
They like everything symmetrical.
Symmetrical and
streamlined.
Streamlined. So you don't have Zen breasts.
No. Okay. They're more festive.
Okay, okay.
It's more exciting.
Festive, a little uneven.
Little uneven.
Yeah, okay.
I like Ice Storm. Is that, what's her name? That woman who looks like a man, but she's somehow
Sigourney
feminine.
Reaver?
Sigourney Reaver.
I do, too.
She's weird looking, but she's fantastic.
Yeah, she is. She's great.
Kevin Kline is good, too. He's interesting.
Now, what about the best picture? Were you surprised with Crash?
I have to say, I'm a little surprised. I like Brokeback Mountain, even though, Mark, I wanted more sex.
Yeah.
Did you see the movie?
Yeah, I did.
The tent is too dark.
Yeah.
Too dark. And I'm not homoerotic fantasy woman.
Sure.
But 20 years of falling in love, you need more action at the beginning. It's it's not believable.
Yeah, well, I don't know. The spitting on the hand said it all for me.
When he went, and I was like, okay,
I know what's happening. It did make me uncomfortable.
Lotion.
Sure, but
this is our professional consultant.
Dude,
if you had me a consultant on show, it would have been very different.
The guy couldn't even get potatoes. Lotion, I think, was a tall order out in the West.
But you never know. In Hollywood, you know, lotion, why not, right? In
okay. Where are we at?
The best picture, Crash.
Okay.
Could not stand this movie.
Okay.
It's a ridiculous movie.
Yeah,
and talk about contrived plot. It's okay. The acting was solid. Yes, Matt Dillon, client.
Yeah.
Client, by the way. Very loyal client. Yeah. Many, many years.
I like Matt Dillon.
He's very good, but this movie, everything fits so nicely. All the stories, black, white, gangs, drugs. It's better to take sledgehammer, that says tolerance, hit audience on head until our skulls bleed. That is more subtle than this movie.
Do you not think?
I think so. Fake bullets with the Persian and the young girl and the blanks.
Come on, it's
ridiculous. And Dandy Newton with the car. It's too much.
Yeah,
and, you know, maybe when you show a piece of Laurel Canyon in movie, all the Academy voters, oh, this is near
my
house.
Yeah.
I live here. It's brilliant. Because we are brilliant, it's brilliant. So that's the movie. Either they're afraid of homo movie.
Maybe
they're afraid of homo.
Or maybe they just want to keep the homo movie in the closet.
Look at you with the buns. Always a slot for you in my house. No pun intended.
See how I brought that back. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark. Svetlana, that's okay.
Yeah, okay. All right. She is our, I think she's going to be the entertainment reporter from here. I think you did a very good job.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Please visit my website.
Okay. You know, look, as bad as everything is and as angry and despairing as I can get about politics and the world, folks, as I get older, I want to enjoy my life a bit. Is that okay with everybody? Because you know what? I'm probably more than halfway done with it. So speaking of the Oscars, look, enjoyment is not something that comes easy to me, Jim. I don't know if you realize that about me. I was blessed with a genetic propensity for self-loathing. So just relief of any kind feels like enjoyment, right? So I'm sitting there, I'm asking myself, what do I like to do? Yeah, I like to play guitar. I like to eat. I like to watch my cats. I like to have sex with myself or my wife. I like to see people I don't like fail. I like to watch movies, all right? And I've always loved movies. So I locked down. I was going to watch the Oscars last night, you know, with an open mind, a naive mind. I just wanted to see stars.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be entertained. And, you know, in a second, I'll tell you how that unfolded for me. You are listening to The Mark Maron Show. The number here is 877-520-1150. Progressive Talk AM. Stay AM 1150. That's what I meant to say. We'll be back with Jeff Leeds and my Oscar coverage.
You're listening to a man who, when threatened by predators, can inflate his body to within three times its normal size. Mark Maron! And now, beneath his mountain of wealth, lies a river of waste. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Nice to see you, too. You're listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. It is 24 past the hour. You can join the party at Mark, M-A-R-C, Maron, M-A-R-O-N.com. So I was saying, Oh, by the way, that 9/11 thing, loosechange911.com. Go ahead and start, you know, reopen the investigative speculation for yourself. You're not paranoid. You're not a conspiracy theorist. You're just trying to, you know, use your imagination in a way that is malignant and unresolvable. But it's good. It helps. So, look, last night, I'm sitting down. I'm like, I wanted to be a movie star, Jim. I wanted to be a big comedian. I wanted to be a lot of things. When I was a kid, I loved movie stars. I loved it. And I wanted to clear my mind, watch the Oscars, and have an entertainment experience. So right from the get-go, my experience is strained because I was in this constant battle with my desire to be entertained and my age-old, resentment and jealousy of Jon Stewart. All right, look, I've known him for years. I appreciate what he does. I've laughed at his jokes, but I don't like the guy. All right. I think he's a pander monkey who doesn't really show who he is. All right. And I think you'll agree with me on that. And I think it's the primary responsibility of a comic to at least show who you are. So when he started to tweak after, you know, two jokes into his monologue, I can't tell you how enjoyable that was for me as a Schadenfreude connoisseur. All right. Now, okay, look, I know it's bad karma. I know I'm a player hater. I know it's a tough gig. I feel guilty, and I'm glad he pulled it out towards the middle and got some good funny in there, all right? But just go with me on this. Mm-hmm. It got a little weird after 3-6 Mafia won for Best Movie Song, or whatever it's called, for It's Hard Out There for a Pimp, all right? Their performance of the song, for me, was by far the most earnest and visceral performance of the entire night, all right? Just having a guy named Crunchy up there doing anything, all right, I thought was great, okay? So they showed up. They delivered, and when they won, they were overwhelmed with excitement. They showed it. It felt human. There's obviously a hack take on this, the thanking Jesus after a rap song. But that aside, you know, when Stewart said the joke about checking the scorecard, 3-6 Mafia won, Oscar, one Oscar, Martin Scorsese, zero, to me, I thought that was condescending. And to me, all of a sudden, I became very sensitive to the, the undercurrent of white racial exclusiveness of show business. I mean, that's just how I felt. I felt uncomfortable. You know, worse yet, it's an elitist, white, liberal exclusiveness. And that made me even more irritated. And that's last night. All right. So today I'm listening to Al Franken. He mocked the song on his show. Mike Malloy condescended the song on his show. This is on our network. And I just don't understand, why is it so easy for certain liberals to think that they can do that without earning the respect to come from that place? I don't know. You know, I don't know where that comes from in me or why I was experiencing this. I might be reading into it, but I thought Jamie Foxx was actually pissed when he got up there to present. I really thought, and I thought it was because of this. Yes. Now, believe me, folks, whatever capital liberals might have earned in the late 60s is not a precedent by which we can approach race at this point in history. I just don't think so. You know, like when Clooney made his speech, let's play that. Can we play that speech right here?
You know, we are a little bit out of touch in Hollywood every once in a while, I think. It's probably a good thing. We're the ones who talk about AIDS when it was just being whispered. And we talked about civil rights when it wasn't really popular. And we, we bring up subjects. We're the ones, this academy, this group of people gave Hattie McDaniel an Oscar in 1939, when blacks were still sitting in the backs of theaters. I'm proud to be a part of this academy. Proud to be part of this community, and proud to be out of touch. And I thank you so much for this.
All right, now, he was right in what he was saying, and his pride was real, but what goes unspoken and what became revealed through Stewart's joke is that integration of blacks is conditional to them behaving as whites expect them to, or be condescended by white liberals and putting their true cultural expression into the same category as minstrel shows. I mean, that is my feeling, and that's coming from the left. And maybe I'm over bounds here, over the top, whatever. But mocking, no matter what anyone might say, is not a display of tolerance. And I believe that's true. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but culture, in a lot of ways, outside of politics, is all we have to go on. And I'm going to talk to a guy after the break here. His name's Jeff Leeds. He's a music columnist for the New York Times. And we'll look into some of this stuff, among other things, about also how music influences culture, but also how music has been made available lately in the music business a little bit, and why I can't stop hitting my iPod buttons, because it's like a morphine delivery system. 28 past, AM 1150.
And now, fire excites him, Mark Maron.
Yeah, it does excite me. 35 past the hour. You're listening to AM 1150 Progressive Talk. Go to markmaron.com. That's MARCMARON.com. We're about to talk to Jeff Leeds, who's a columnist for the New York Times, about music and about my little tirade in terms of liberal condescension to hip-hop music on some level and to black culture on some level, which I think does exist. I'd like to take this call real quick. How are you? What's going on, Sanchez and Montebello? What's up, bro?
Man, I want to take this from a slightly different angle now, because look, I've been a DJ for a long, long time.
Okay.
As far as the songs, to be completely honest with you, all of the music that was nominated this year, they really sucked from a melodic level. I don't think in a year's time we'll even be playing or listening or even remember
Fine.
What all three of these songs
okay.
were. That's how I'm looking at the 3-6 Mafia song. And the way John Stewart, the way I was interpreting this, I found him to be saying, like, look, here's somebody like a director like Martin Scorsese, who's been, I mean, countless classic films that this guy has produced.
Yeah.
And zero Oscars to go along for it. And in 100 years' time, who are we going to be really, which name will mean more? Which will weigh more balance? Will
okay.
that be Scorsese or will it be the 3-6 Mafia? That was my interpretation.
Okay, point taken, Sanchez. Thanks, man.
Sure thing.
Okay. See, well, he's reading into it in a different way than I did, and that might be giving John the benefit of the doubt, and I think he deserves that. But let's talk to Jeff Leeds. Our guest is a columnist for New York Times. His writings about the music business make him uniquely qualified to get into this discussion we're having about hip-hop in the white entertainment establishment. Thanks for coming to the show, Jeff. Nice to see you.
No problem.
So, look, my basic comment was I just got the feeling. Now, I'm not judging the song's integrity. I'm not even a hip-hop fan per se, but I don't listen to much new music anyways, but I have nothing against it. But I thought that when Jon Stewart said 3-6 Mafia, one Oscar, Martin Scorsese, zero, and just the tone that the award ceremony took after that and some of the mocking, and then there was more condescension to the way they accepted the award, which I personally felt that it was one of the more, you know, honest and sort of exciting moments of the show. It was very human. I thought that their performance was also, you know, very visceral and very human. It kind of broke the show open a little bit and made me realize, like, what a bunch of stiffs that everybody is at these things.
I think the interpretive dance version of It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp was something that that people probably did not expect. And I think that it's fair to say, though, that was a pretty big night for those guys. I mean, I think it was definitely a surprise that the song won the Oscar. And I think it was, in many ways, a pretty big night for hip-hop.
Sure. How so?
Well, I think that, you know, again, coming into the show, I think that song was sort of an underdog. And it's sort of interesting to think about the fact that at the Grammy Awards, you know, which were about a month ago, you had, for the second year in a row, a big album and a critically acclaimed one from someone like Kanye West that was passed over for Album of the Year. And yet you come into the Oscars where the competition was from Dolly Parton and those kinds of artists, and it's the hip-hop song that kind of comes out of left field and wins. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Again, I'll tell you, the performance of Kanye West and
Jamie Foxx
at the Grammys was mind-blowing. I mean, that award show is probably the worst award show to watch ever, because they don't even I don't even know what that is. It's almost like no one cares that it's being shot and you're watching it. But when they came out with that bit, that was genius.
That was definitely a highlight of the night.
But let me explore this a little more with you in terms of the music business. That the music business, by and large, has been, you know, headed off by, essentially, outside of maybe their money policy, liberal Jews. Now, and how they've treated blacks in entertainment, you know, going back for however long, that goes both ways. I mean, but right now, in terms of how hip-hop is treated within the music industry and how music industry executives really believe or behave, you know, do you see a big gap there?
Well, there's a fascinating history in the music business of black music and hip hop specifically being sort of underestimated. It goes back, you know, really to the beginning of the 80s, the late 70s, when hip hop music was first emerging.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't remember this, but when MTV first came out in 1980 or 81, it was sort of an album oriented rock channel. There really were no music videos from black artists. And it took Michael Jackson, really, and his popularity to kind of break through that. And it's sort of incredible that you think 20 years later, you know, to the extent that you can see videos on MTV, that you know, so many of them are now, it's really dominated by hip-hop.
It's just profound to me that still in my life and among my peers, it seems that there's such a distance between, you know, the black music that I might have grown up with or that I like when I was a kid and the black music that comes out now. I feel alienated from, but I do not. It's only because I don't investigate it. Now, I guess my big question is, in within the music industry, do you see a separation? Do you see that black acts are treated differently than white acts, or that they are just the cash cow? Or do you think that there really is some sort of integration within the music executive world as well?
I think there's a certain degree of integration. I think that the issue of diversity in the corporate workplace in the music business is still a very important one. It's a very divisive one. Still, there's only really one or two black executives who run what you would consider major labels today, and mm-hmm. I think that continues to be an issue as hip hop shows really very few signs of kind of weakening in its power in the marketplace. I think that's always going to sort of be a difficult issue for the industry to grapple with.
But how in terms of managers and artists themselves, it seems that a lot more power is had by these managers and artists themselves than ever before because of the way music is distributed now. Is that true?
Well, I think a lot more power is in the hands of the fans than ever before. A lot of fans can sort of go online at any point during the day and find pretty much any song that they want for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then can take those songs and play them on their iPods or do whatever they sort of want mm-hmm. with them, and the establishment really has very little control over that. And the last several years have really been all about how do we sort of put the genie back in the bottle and how do we sort of get control of this new distribution system.
I've got a buddy who has been a friend of mine for years who's a music manager, and he thinks it's just terrific to see the dinosaurs flailing, to see them literally in extinction, screaming. In the way he's handling it and the way he's dealing with the fans is that he seems to think that the best way to market music now is to put it out there on the internet. Do not go to a record label first. Print your own. See if it takes hold with the kids. Sell them out of your own stock and then hit the road and make a fortune on merchandise. And then after you do that for a year, after you develop one artist along those lines, then get them a record deal.
There's definitely a lot of managers who feel that way, and there's definitely a lot of artists who feel that way, who feel like the internet has sort of broken down the structures that the barriers that sort of used to be required to kind of enter the game. And I think that you see a lot of independent labels really thriving in this environment, even as the majors struggle, because they are, play a little bit, they just play by sort of looser rules and mm-hmm. are happy to sort of give music away in some cases, and, tend to sort of have deals with the artists that sometimes give the artist a chance to develop more than you would than you'd find in a major label. So that's really, that seems to be the way that a lot of artists are thinking these days.
So now, I'm older. I don't know how old are you?
32.
All right. So you're 10 years younger than I am. And I am entering that part of my life where it's sad for me to say, but I've become sort of nostalgic. I do have an iPod. I got on board with that. And now it's a little kind of a Proustian rush machine that I can sort of time travel through my adolescence. And I find that most of the music I'm listening to, it's still not that much new music, and the new music that I do put into it, I don't lock into. Is that by virtue of age, or am I not alone in this nostalgia?
It depends on what you're listening to. What kind of records have you been listening to?
Well, like I downloaded some Art Tatum the other day, which is not even of my nostalgia period, but I had never listened to it before, and I needed to listen to it. I was reading something about him. I do that with jazz artists. If I'm reading about a musician, I like to have everything they've ever made with me at all times so I can get my head into it. I'm listening to System of a Down. So I literally in the same day I downloaded System of a Down, Art Tatum. I wish that they would make a list of people for the most strange dissonant downloads. And I just find that even by virtue of the technology I have, that I am going back to my old favorites. Is that a trend that is apparent in the industry at all?
I think one of the things that I noticed a couple of weeks ago was that if you look at the chart, there's a Billboard chart that tracks the most popular single songs downloaded legitimately paid for on the internet. And it's incredible to me that you can find that literally hundreds of thousands of people have bought Eye of the Tiger by Survivor.
That's hilarious.
Or Sweet Home Alabama, all those sort of old classic songs.
Aren't there stations that just play those two songs all the time over and over again? Literally, the Eye of the Tiger station, I think.
Could be in this building.
Right here in this building.
Could be in this building. I was just going to say that.
So that is something that people of a certain age group are doing, but the younger people are feeding on.
It's hard to say really who's doing that. I definitely think that there's a strong contingent of teens and young music fans who are kind of rediscovering or discovering for the first time for them bands like Queen or Black Sabbath and bands like that who they want to really kind of delve into. And since they grew up with computers and the internet, that's the way that they sort of relate and to an interface with music. That's how they're going to get to
it. Don't you find that a lot of them get the entry to those bands? The entree is given by the bands that they've grown to like when those bands say who their heroes were? Because there are a lot of bands that the kids don't pay attention to, but if the band they're listening to says, well, my influences are Zeppelin, they're like, dude, Zeppelin.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that influences are one important way, but what's fascinating is that, you know, there are so many kind of older bands that, there's so many younger bands that are being passed over by these young fans in favor of the older bands. There are kids who will listen to Queen and Zeppelin and Sabbath, but they're really not interested in, you know, today's rock band of the week.
Well, who are you interested in today's rock band of the week? I mean, like new music, like give me some hope, because I am not jaded enough to say there's not a lot of talent out there, because there obviously is. I am frightened by the fact that a lot of that talent seems to think they have to sound like other people or to honor a niche that is popular in the market. So in terms of people really breaking through, like, I'm coming around to the Strokes, and I resented them initially because I was a big fan of Television and the Velvet Underground and some of the stuff they draw from. But as I listen to it more, I can understand that they are drawing from it. They aren't ripping it off, and they do have their own sound to some degree. But who is really doing something that you're like, where the hell did this come from?
That's a good question. Let's see. One band I like a lot is called Black Rebel Motorcycle Club.
I got to write that down. Black what?
Black Rebel Motorcycle Club.
You got to tell them to shorten that. All right.
I think the name comes from a Brando movie.
Okay.
But they have their influences too. At the beginning when they first came out, they're still compared to Jesus and Mary Chain.
Okay.
It's very kind of like fuzzy guitar rock. But they have a record that came out last year that is, you know, completely stripped down, very like roots rock Americana kind of oriented. I like it a lot. It's a great
roots rock Americana oriented, like the Blasters or Los Lobos or where? How far back are you going? Give me a frame.
It's not. Here. It's not really. I don't know. The Blasters are kind of in there, maybe a tiny little bit. It's just kind of. It's like sort of porch. You know, back sitting on the porch, kind of stomp your boots, kind of music.
Right. There seems to be this whole resurrection of sort of laid back kind of, you know, Southern California / Hawaii songwriting writer thing going on that I can't really lock on to at all. Sheryl Crow I can't deal with. I'm sorry that she might be ill, but I don't like the whole new laid back California thing.
Right. Jack wrong? Johnson just came out with an album that debuted at number one a couple weeks ago.
I got nothing against him. I saw him once on Letterman, and you know, I got a friend who's really into him, and my wife is friends with the people that manage him, and it didn't resonate with me. I needed a little more something. It's like, come on, where's the
you need to rock out a little bit.
I do need to rock out a little bit.
I just think, you know, put in the latest Nine Inch Nails record, you know, drive around for a while, you'll be all right.
Yeah, I didn't, you know what? I went through a period where I was listening to Nine Inch Nails almost compulsively. And oddly, I do some of my most, you know, deep listening when I'm exercising, which is sad, but I think a lot of people do it. But back then when I got the Nine Inch Nails records, I was still smoking pot. So I'd smoke pot and exercise and listen to Nine Inch Nails. And a lot of people don't realize that the iPod or your Discman or whatever you're listening to, it's really, it's like a drug delivery system because you're maneuvering your endorphins to interact with whatever you're doing.
There's a whole instant gratification.
Yeah.
Thing happening
yeah.
right now that I think is really interesting because I think people, it works on computers too. People say, I've got to have We Will Rock You by Queen right now, and you can go on the internet and buy it.
Well, I think that's okay. Don't you?
Yeah, I know. I think it's incredible.
There are other sites where you can get the other instant gratification for absolutely free if you're quick.
That's true. Or or a subscription.
That's right. That which I never do. Well, Jeff, you know, it was good talking to you. I feel like we could talk for more time, but we're not going to do it this time. Can we do it next time? Will you come back? Did you have a good enough time here?
Absolutely.
Jeff Leeds, columnist for the New York Times. Is there a place that they can go to read your stuff? Do you have a website or anything?
The New York Times at nytimes.com.
That's the New York Times. It's a paper out of New York. It's coming up on 50 past the hour. Thanks so much for joining us, Jeff.
You bet.
We're going to come back. Jeff Ross is going to be with us. We got today's Dick of the Day. It's AM 1150, Progressive Talk. 877-520-1150 is our number. I'll get to you, Joy. Just hang on.
That whispering in the trees, it's two cities and they're only pipes and chains and swinging hands.
And now back to the only guy on his block who won't get cable, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. 54 past the hour. You're listening to The Mark Maron Show on AM 1150, Progressive Talk. LA's Progressive Talk, that is. 877-520-1150 is the number. In just a few minutes, we're going to have Jeff Ross out here. Jeff Ross, who I've known for a million years. I knew him when his name was Jeff Lifschultz. Oh, I hope he doesn't care that I told him that. Man, did I ever watch him get funny. At the beginning, it was, but, you know, he's gone on. I'll get into that with him when he gets in here. I did the one roast that I ever did in my life at Chevy Chase, he didn't host. He is the roast guy, and he wasn't there. Maybe that's why I did so badly on that show.
You know, hey, you know, I've watched Mr. Ross many times on the TV.
Yeah.
And I fancy myself kind of a roast guy myself.
No kidding.
I've written a few roast jokes for you, actually.
Oh, this is going to hurt.
Would you like, well, yeah, like to hear him?
Bring it on, yeah.
Mark is such a great comic. The other night he played to such a large crowd, the people in the back row had to heckle like this. You suck! Pass it up.
Yeah. Wow, that's good.
Mark's hometown was so small, the Waxer Museum was just a display of used Q-tips.
Wow, okay. There you go.
Mark's dad was a doctor, but he always wanted to own his own food business, you know? Uh-huh. So he decided to open up a restaurant. He called it the Turn Your Head in Coffee Shop.
That's sort of a shot at my dad. None of these have hurt me yet.
Yeah, your dad. Right. Anyway, he even invented his own dessert dish called the Mexican Sundae.
What's that?
Just a scoop of chocolate tossed over a barbed wire fence.
Oh, that's more about the Mexicans, really.
No, it's your dad.
Oh, okay, yeah, it's my dad.
Mark's got a tattoo of a drawbridge on his penis.
I do.
In order to achieve an erection, Captain Crunch has a replica of the Titanic beneath his scrotum.
That was kind of surreal. That was too surreal to hurt me.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Mark's so dumb, he thinks Indira Gandhi was shot with a Sikh shooter.
Wasn't she?
A Sikh shooter.
I thought she was. No?
No, it was a Sikh with a gun, you idiot.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, sorry.
Mark
yeah.
used to have to work 12 hours a day in the mixing paint in his father's paint factory. It wasn't all that bad, though. At the end of the day, he got to lick the dashers.
Yeah, the dashers.
Okay. That's kind of a technical joke. Anyway, hey, Mark, you know, I ran into your mom today.
Yeah.
Told her stockings were wrinkled. She wasn't wearing any.
Oh, mom. Now, wait a minute. You can't say that about my mother.
Sure I can.
No, you can't. I ought to. What else we got? Is that it? Are we good? Is that all the jokes? What?
One more joke?
Yeah.
Hey, Mark.
What?
Mark's not drunk if he can lay on the floor without holding you on. Holding on.
I don't even understand that.
Okay, wait. I got one more.
What's Jason Stein going to do?
Oh, go ahead, Jason.
Bring it on, Jason the Jew from Wisconsin.
Right, I'll give it a try. I'll turn this down here.
Oh, he turns it down for his joke. We know it's important.
All right, Mark, he never gets any breaks.
Yeah.
Just today, he was walking past the mortuary.
Yeah.
There was a sign on the gate that has picture on it. It said, coming attractions.
Oh, wow. This is a morose one.
This kind of like the sign of your impending death.
You know, all this is taken. You know, I got a couple people on the phone here. They're going to have to wait. So why don't you wait on it? I want to talk to you in Chicago there and the blogosphere. If you can just hang on a little while longer. The number is 877-520-1150. We are coming back with Jeff Ross. You're listening to Progressive Talk.
Live from Burbank, California, predominantly upper middle class and way too expensive for anybody in this studio, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, master of the triple axel, Mark Maron.
All right, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course, lurking conservatives. How are you? The blog is kicking. Been very exciting and supportive. MarkMaron.com, MarkMaron.com. Here's Joy from the blog. Joy, okay, you've been on there for a while. How are you?
Oh, hi, sweetheart.
How are you?
Tired.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, thanks for staying up.
Well,
what's up?
I cannot do anything but stay up for you.
Oh, that's sweet.
Well, you're sweet.
Oh, wow. Where's this going?
No, it's going to, there's a lot of issues that are being ignored, including, oh man, now my brain went dead.
It did?
Sorry.
Well, here, you think about it. I'm going to thank you. Just say there. I want to thank Jill from the blog as well, from brilliantatbreakfast.blogspot.com for sending us a bunch of butter cookies.
Oh, now I remember.
Good. I knew it would come back to you.
Yeah. We're doing, a cookbook.
Yeah, that's right. You and Gypsy.
Me, Gypsy, and Brilliant.
Okay. Oh, good. With Jill. Okay, great.
Brilliant?
Yeah. Yeah, she's brilliant. At breakfastblogspot.com.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's the cookies.
We're going to do a whole cookbook for you, for all of your stuff, but I need to ask you a question.
Okay.
Would you be willing to let us put meat recipes in it?
Yeah, no, you know, I got to be honest with you. Jim is the guy who is a little more committed to vegetarianism than I am, because I have slipped. And did I not tell you people that? I have lapsed. I am not on the no-meat bandwagon anymore, Joy. I'm sorry to disappoint everybody.
Well, that's okay. I make food with meat. So.
Okay, good. Yeah, no, knock yourself out. Put the meat recipes in there.
Well, I make homemade chicken stock and...
Oh, good. So you got a lot of time.
Oh, I got lots of stuff. and mole sauce.
Oh, mole sauce. Yeah, put all that stuff in there.
Okay, so right. So what we need, though, from you is some of your best recipes.
Okay, I'll work on that, and I'll try and get that by the end of the week, okay?
So can we put you on the... Is there any way we can put you on a list?
What kind of list?
So you can contribute? Because everyone wants... Your Marc Maron address is bouncing.
Okay, all right. What does that mean?
In other words, we try to email you.
Oh, okay, I get it. Okay, yeah, no, we'll work it out. Let's do it off the air, and I'll post something on the blog, and we'll get this taken care of.
Okay, so how do we contact you?
I'll start it. All right, I'll start it on the blog. I'll find you guys.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Joy.
We love you guys. All right. We really love you.
I love you too.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Wow. That was wild. Really? All right, look, but now they're doing a cookbook, and I'm all for it. You know, I love to cook. Today I made some spinach and some brown rice and some mushrooms. I love it.
You got to commit yourself to that white bean thing.
Oh, that's right. Well, I got to tell them, look, this is not important right now. Every day we bestow an honor upon one distinguished U.S. citizen whose behavior clearly echoes that of our own vice president. But today, our honoree is actually an elected public servant, Jim. It marks the first time an elected official has become the Marc Maron Show Dick of the Day. South Dakota Governor Mike Rounds signed legislation into law today banning practically all abortions in the state. There is only one abortion clinic in that state. It is the Sioux Falls Planned Parenthood, and they have vowed to challenge the new law. Anti-abortion groups are offering money to the state, and one anonymous donor had pledged $1 million to defend the ban. All right? Governor Rounds knew going into this that the chance of the law being tied up in the court for years was almost like 100%. All right? His goal was to provoke the Supreme Court into hearing the case and facilitating what could be the first across-the-board challenge to Roe v. Wade before this new, theocratically sympathetic Supreme Court. So for initiating what could be the first step to turning the clocks of time back to the days of deadly, illegal abortions and making women's wombs the wards of the state, South Dakota Governor Mike Rounds is today Dick of the Day here on the Marc Maron Show, my friends. There you go. You know, it's amazing. No matter what progress progressives and Democrats make toward creating some kind of understanding of the crimes and injustices of the neocon death cult in the people who would not even entertain the idea of those injustices before, that when it comes down to the wire, unfortunately, a large number of regular Americans will and can be sold on voting on moral issues. That's why I call them the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigade. It's for a reason, folks. They are an army with a mission. They have leaders in the legislature. They have a purpose that they feel has been divined unto them by God, and they are willing to vote that and only that issue, and they can persuade others to do so. They are persistent and ambitious and scheming to deny us all of our fundamental rights in the name of their religious beliefs. I believe they are fundamentally anti-American, unconstitutional, these guys. And I don't mean to get serious, but this is like one of these pet peeves with me. Watch out for Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas. He will eventually become the Republican nominee for president. Maybe not in 2008, but he will, people. Mark my words. He is a shameless theocrat, dead set on replacing the Constitution with the Bible. These people, they're fundamentally, they're just anti-American. And they are, in my eyes, in the long run, a much greater threat to democracy than the neocon death cult. I just believe this. When the neocon death cult is brought down by their own hubris and the diligence of progressives, i.e. the true patriots, and the country wakes up and realizes that it has been anally raped economically and we're living in a perpetual depression, there's definitely, in my eyes, and this is, it's not prophetic and it's not paranoid, but there will be a war between democracy and theocracy. And when people are frightened, we know this from our experience with 9/11. When people are frightened, they are easily led to what makes them feel safe. But when they are desperate and frightened, they are easily led anywhere. We need politicians that truly speak the language of democracy to protect our schools and state houses and culture from Christo fascists. I know this sounds alarmist, and maybe I'm, you know, maybe I'll find a little tirade, but I think it's true. I mean, just last week, some Missouri state legislatures introduced some resolution that would give government approval and protection to Christianity. And they base this on falsely stating that the founding fathers recognized a Christian God. Now, these lawmakers, all right, they say right there in the resolution, quote, protect the majority's right to express religious beliefs and should stand with the majority of our constituents and exercise the common sense that voluntary prayer in public schools and religious displays on public property are not a coalition of church and state, end quote. Well, they are. And then it goes on to say that those actions reveal, quote, the positive role that Christianity has played in this great nation of ours, end quote. All right. So at the cost of inclusiveness and other people's beliefs, these anti-American, anti-constitutional lawmakers in Missouri want to legislate their religious beliefs into law on the grounds of protecting the majority. Oh, the poor majority feels threatened. You got to always look out for that majority because they're, you know, they're the ones really at risk here. They're even trying to infiltrate Hollywood, Jim. Hollywood. The bastion of liberal thought. Listen to this. Have you ever heard of this? Have you ever heard of Act One? Do you know what Act One is?
Yeah.
Act One, I'm going to read from their literature right here. This is actoneprogram.com. Act One is a nonprofit organization that trains people of faith for careers in mainstream film and television. Act One offers two main programs, the Writing for Hollywood Summer Program for aspiring film and television writers, and the executive program for aspiring entertainment executives, as well as screenwriting weekends and many other programs and services. Stressing artistry, excellence, professionalism, and spirituality, Act One prepares students to be, quote, salt and light, end quote, in writers' rooms, on sets, and in studios and network offices. Our goal is not to produce explicitly, quote, unquote, religious entertainment, but movies and TV programs that combine mastery of craft with an unusual quality of depth that leads people to Jesus. I added that last part, the leading people to Jesus part. Got nothing about Jesus, one of the great Jewish magicians.
She's very worried about that.
I'm just worried because what I'm worried about is that it's organized, and they are relentless, and they are going to enter the legislature. They are going to enter wherever they can, and they are diligent, and they're going to do it in an unspoken way. So why everybody's worrying about everything else, and we think that these moral issues are not that important, they will try to make this country a theocracy. I mean, this woman who did this Act One, this Hollywood thing, is a former nun named Barbara Nicolosi, and she has made Hollywood her mission. And her goal is to, quote, transform the entertainment community and ultimately popular culture from the inside out, end quote. And that is the same manifesto of the theocrats in the government. That's what I think. And you're a guy who believes this. You know, yeah. And I've said this before. It's about power. Of course the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigade wants to outlaw abortion and gay marriage. Their leaders need a constant influx of lost, unwanted, frightened, confused, self-hating, desperate people to guarantee their livelihood and power. The military-industrial complex needs a constant influence of the same type of people to fight their wars and fill their prisons. The corporatocracy needs those people to get into debt buying crap they don't need. These are poor people, by and large. Their lives and desires are the coal for the engines of the great greed machine. I've said this before. This is the triad that will truly end it all. That's what I think. And you have feelings about religion, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are they?
Well, my feeling, I don't think we have as much to worry about for religion in this country. It is remarkable as that may seem coming from me, as we do corporate America.
And that's the environmental issues.
Yes, and well, I think we have more to worry from a plutocracy than we do a theocracy, because I don't think theocracy is going to survive underneath a plutocracy. I think the corporate America has already destroyed religion in this country.
No, they're in collusion, man. Religion will be turned out by the plutocracy in order to do their bidding.
Corporate America is controlling.
Exactly.
You know, the religious America.
So then you should be scared of both.
I am scared of both, but in Hollywood, I don't think there's anything to worry about in Hollywood, because Hollywood's always been infiltrated and run at certain times by messianic, you know, morons and
right, but they were of a different faith, and they were fairly secular. That's going back to like day one, for God's sakes.
You had the Hollywood moguls up to the 50s and the 60s.
But those guys were Jews trying to reinvent America so that it would include them. Don't you understand?
Right. Yeah. All right, let's turn into Christians.
Let's talk. They had a pass.
You know. Change your name from Leibowitz to Stewart. You know, it's the same thing.
Ooh, it's getting hairy. Mike in L.A., what's going on, Mike?
Hey, man, I'm just really angry lately.
Yeah, what's up?
We really need to be showing more courage.
Yeah.
If we are ever going to learn to win,
yeah,
we've got to start taking that three-point shot when it gets late in the game.
Right.
I mean, we were down by 20 points the other night.
Yeah.
And we were taking from the low post. We were going for, like, the easy shots. Like, nobody knew what they were doing. I mean, am I right?
It's not Clippers talk, man.
What?
No, this is the Mark Maron show. It's not Clippers night.
Huh?
Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
Oh, I love you, man.
All right. Love you, too. The Clippers guy. Oh, let's do this while we got a minute. Jared in Chicago, up in the middle of the night. What's up, my friend?
I know it's past 1 o'clock, and I'm listening to you, but it makes me very happy.
Oh, it's only past 1. Oh, good. Okay, good. Well, I forgot it's not a Clippers night. We're on at a reasonable time out here in L.A., and you can listen at 1 o'clock.
Well,
did you call on the secret number?
Yes, I did. I've been listening to podcasts, and if my wife were up right now, she'd tell me to tell you to give Jim Earl a big kiss, because we love the Cardinal.
Oh, the Cardinal gets the props. So what's going on, Jared?
You're getting your panty all up in a bunch because of the whole 3-6 Mafia and the Academy. I think you're being silly about it. I mean, I know you're covering serious subjects like the theocracy that's trying to threaten to take over this country. But
you want me to relax about the Oscars?
Yeah. Well, it's just that, listen, the Academy is the establishment.
I know.
And 3-6 Mafia, you know, derivative rock and roll hip hop, it's supposed to be by nature anti-establishment. And, I mean, it's fine if they want to show up and get excited about winning an award. But
yeah,
if they're really rock and roll, you know, they're not.
They wouldn't have showed up. They'd be in the van.
Yeah, they've joined the bandwagon. So for the people who are all stuck up wearing dressed up like penguins and sticking their nose up at 3-6 Mafia. Well, what do you expect,
Did you get off on the fact that the woman in 3-6 Mafia was wearing a Maryland dress? I mean, that was, I thought that was pretty clever, man. And I thought that was definitely an FU to the business on some level.
Maybe, I don't know.
I got to go, Jared. You
know, all right.
You all right?
I'm great, man.
I'm glad you're well. I'll talk to you later. I love you, too. 20 past. You're listening to AM 1150, LA's Progressive Talk, 877-520-1150. Jeff Ross, the comedian and filmmaker. He was in Iraq, folks. We're going to talk about it. Stick around. 20 past.
Now back to a man who proposed to his wife by asking, "This looks like a war to you?" Mark Maron!
Yeah. 24 past the hour. I am Mark Maron. It's my show. 877-520-1150 is the phone number. This is Progressive Talk 1150. We're going to be talking to Jeffrey Ross here in just 2 seconds. He's actually standing right here. I might as well introduce him. Yeah, this guy I've known for a million years. We sort of started out together. We've been friends on and off for a long time. I remember when he had a different name and he wasn't funny.
More off than on, by the way.
What do you want from me? Who was I friends with ever? Jeff Ross on the mic. Who was I ever friends with?
You always sort of kept to yourself.
Exactly. You know why?
It's really about talking to the Poochie for you, if I recall.
What does that mean?
You weren't really doing stand-up to hang out with the guys. You were there to, like, speak your mind and talk to girls after the show.
All right. There's nothing wrong with that for a guy
who's... I realize times have changed, and you have a steady gig now and a steady woman and all that.
It is. It's a good news.
Talking about back in the day.
That's right. Well, we were talking about the Oscars earlier, and I think you and I share... So we actually have more in common than you think. We're both from New Jersey, number one. And number two, despite what you may know about me, I have a profound respect for the old guys.
Right.
I really do. I mean, I love Buddy Hackett. I love Don Rickles. I grew up watching those guys. I used to look forward to the roasts. These guys had gravitas. These guys were real stars. And I was talking about the Oscars earlier, and I was watching it, and I felt I didn't feel like there was enough real stars. Where the hell are the real stars anymore? I mean, Clooney's got a little something, but when Meryl Streep and Lily Tomlin came out, and then when Nicholson came out, it was as if, like, thank God, real stars.
You know what really drove me crazy?
What?
They cut to a reaction shot during that Jennifer Aniston came out in a black gown.
Yeah.
Like she was about to announce the death of Princess Diana all over
right,
again.
Yeah, right.
Whereas then you see her cracking up watching Meryl Streep and Lily Tomlin.
Right.
You know, Jennifer Aniston's a funny lady. She could have come out and told a joke about costume design instead of she came out like she was in mourning.
Yeah.
The whole show was, and they played music
heavy.
Under everybody, this heavy piano music.
Right, and they literally bullied people off. They shut the lights on some guy before he even got to the mic. They shut the lights on.
Yet they let 90-year-old... What's her name?
Lauren Bacall.
Stand there for 3.5 minutes and read a speech from 90 feet away with nobody around her to save her.
Oh, it was
Phil
sad.
Hoffman
that was just...
has to have music and a lady standing next to him.
Right.
And he's got... But this old lady, they drag out there, and then they let her wander around during the interpretive musical dances. That was mean.
Oh, yeah. Is that who that was during that?
She was dancing by a flaming car. I don't know.
You know, it's weird when things get really human, though. Because I was watching that, Jeff. I'm watching Lauren Bacall. And there is that moment where all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God.
She's gonna die.
Yeah, what's going to happen? Like, you felt bad. It's like, you're just hoping I'll get the train back on track. Don't hurt yourself.
Where was Robin Williams, the real stars, to come up there and save her?
He, oddly, as much as I dislike him, he is a real star. And I don't dislike him, but that was the wrong thing to say.
What you're saying is, where's the superstars?
Well, it's like when you watch the old roast, okay? When it's like it's Rickles, it's Steve Martin, it's Jerry Lewis, you got Jimmy Stewart sitting there, you got Cary Grant before he died. I think that show business used to be a smaller operation,
right.
And everybody knew each other, and there was this type of, you know, whether they liked each other or not, the respect and professionalism was intact.
Sure.
And now you got all these young people, and not that I have anything against young people, but you want to see stars that have like the nachis to be stars. You know what I'm saying, Jew?
Absolutely, Jew. Absolutely.
So,
Caesar the King is the only one still around.
Is he really?
Don Rickles, maybe.
Don Rickles is still around. I guess that's right. Most of them. Shelley Berman is still around.
Right.
Though
you know,
he wasn't
guys
really
aren't
part
really
of it.
Doing comedy anymore.
Berman's been very funny on that show. What a great resurrection on Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's just been great.
I love the traditions. You know, that's the one thing about the Oscars is I like. Is
yeah.
Jon Stewart, you know, think about how he did. I thought he did great, and he can wear Billy Crystal's tux and saves him $250.
Okay. Yeah. You wrote for Crystal, right? So you were probably sitting there. You probably watch it different than most people. You're like, I could have had a joke for that
guy. I'm very
guy.
Critical.
Yeah?
And shouldn't you be as tall as an Oscar to host the Oscars?
Yeah. Oh, good one. Yay, it's roast time. I can't handle the roast. I am not cut out for it.
No, but you are a good target.
Yeah. Yeah, because it really hurts me. We're gonna
talk. You're a good sport. No, you got to be a good sport.
I've learned how to do that. We're gonna talk to Jeff Ross about his film, about his experiences in Iraq as a comedian. I'm assuming not a soldier. In just a minute. So, why don't you stick around for that? I'm sure we'll talk about the Oscars for a minute. AM 1150 Progressive Talk. Stay with us. It's 28 past.
And now he's a convicted grave robber, but chicks dig him. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. 35 past the hour. You're listening to AM Progressive Talk, 1150. You know, Lauren Bacall was great, though. You got to admit that, Jeff, don't you? She was great in her day.
She's 145 years old.
I know. They should take care. They should double-check that, make sure that they're capable.
Her seg number is 3.
Oh, there you go. There's a classic. There's a classic. What's going on? You got, come on, roast me, man. Take a couple of shots. What do you got?
I only roast celebrities.
Oh, bang.
Don't you got any music? You got some music?
Yeah, bring it. Bring
it.
Here we go.
Good.
Take some hips. All right.
What is this? James Bond?
Come on.
Don't you have anything?
What do you got?
You hippies.
Whoa. What do you got?
Mark Maron, can you lower it a little bit? I'm not going to sing. Thanks. Mark Maron in the evenings.
It's a dating game, dude.
Yeah, I can't. I can't.
It's a little weird. That would be a little weird if him and I started doing that. You know what I mean? It's like, so, Mark, if I were stuck on a desert island, or
had a crappy late night radio show.
Yeah. Oh, there they come. They're sneaking them in. See,
no,
it's
this
not
is really good, Mark. I'm really glad you're back on the air.
Yeah, thank you.
I guess Al Jazeera doesn't do radio yet.
Oh, bang. I think they do, though. I think you can get them right downstairs. Clear Channel's now doing Al Jazeera.
Is that really true?
No, go ahead. What else? Come on, bring it.
Mark, you got to love Mark. He just does a lot. You can just play this again? Yeah, no.
Come on, just in. Come on, take your best shot. Let's
go. Gotta love Mark. He just came back from Iraq. He was entertaining the insurgents.
Yay, that's good. I like that. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Folks, Marc Maron is to comedy what Ralph Nader is to comedy.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Okay.
All right.
Right. Is that it?
So how about this guy? What's your story?
It's Jim Earl.
You already asked that during the break.
This guy. I think you were playing the banjo in Deliverance, weren't you?
Oh, hey, that's a classic.
You're making a joke about my hair.
Yeah. You know what you got to love about Jeff Ross? He's not afraid to use jokes that have been used by people that were using them then from other people. Not afraid to steal what's been stolen, that
Jeff
Ross.
How about these two guys right here?
Yeah, what about them?
How did you manage to find the cast of Bowling for Columbine?
That's Jason, a Jew from Wisconsin, Jeff.
Really? Rare.
He's a Jew
Very
from
rare.
Yes. That's Brendan McDonald.
Like a black guy from Alaska.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's close.
I
that's
do a little
good.
Rickles racial thing
that's
going on.
That's good.
There.
It's good. Great Rickles moment.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet him?
I met him. I sat next to him at Milton Berle's funeral.
Oh, really? Did he say, could you please get me a water or something? Aren't you the waiter? What is that?
Rickles, after the service, I'm in the private bathroom or whatever. Yeah. I go sneak in while they're all leaving. And I'm in there maybe 60 seconds, doing what I got to do. And I come up and I zip up. I open the door. And there's Rickles with his hands on his hips.
Yeah.
He just looks at me. He goes, what, was there a dais in there?
Bang, gotcha. Now, at Milton Berle's funeral, did they bury his penis separately?
His penis was actually buried 4 years earlier. And they had his ashes spread over the Friars Club.
That's one of the great, I guess it's not a myth that he had a very large member.
Yeah, once a year it would shed its skin.
Yeah.
That's how big it was.
Wow, that's big.
Milton Berle's penis?
Yeah.
Have you seen Tommy Lee's?
Uh-uh.
It has an elbow.
Yeah. That's big, the elbow. And
I'm
a hand.
I'm standing on it. That's how big it is. I'm standing on it right now.
Isn't everybody in Hollywood? That's how big it is. So let's talk about the movie because you've done something good here.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about the movie you directed while you're in Iraq and what it's about?
It's about the soldiers. It's about comedy. You'd love it, Mark. It's sort of understanding the job description better than I might have if I hadn't gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not political.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, it's entirely shot in Iraq on a handy cam.
So walk us through it. So you decide to do this.
I'm drunk at the Improv one night.
Yeah.
And Drew Carey hits me up to go to Iraq.
It's called Patriot Act, right?
Patriot Act, the Jeffrey Ross home movie.
So who hits you up to go to Iraq?
Drew Carey.
Okay.
And, I shrug my shoulders. This is right after the fall of Saddam, right before they knew they still didn't know if he was dead or alive. They didn't know if there were weapons of mass destruction. I didn't know what I was getting into. I was looking for an adventure. I was kind of bored with what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I thought it might be, cool.
You know what's weird about that story already? I was bored with what you were doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
So now you see the problem.
Okay.
So, we went to BU, right? I went to film school a long time ago. My buddy Mark says, hey, man. Let's go buy a video camera on the way to the airport.
Yeah.
And I did. And I started shooting like home video, thinking, I don't know, I'd have a couple shows. So I get over there and I start seeing amazing aerial views of what I to Crete and Fallujah and Baghdad and Baquba and all over the Sunni Triangle. And soldiers are talking to me very candidly and openly. And I'm not a reporter, so I'm getting access.
Did they recognize you from the roast and stuff?
Sure, a little bit. But I was really sort of like... shadowing Drew Carey, and there were seven comedians.
Right. Did any of them say, get me out of here, put me in your suitcase, help me out?
I heard all sorts of things.
Uh-huh.
And I still, I've been back since. And, soldiers complain. That's normal for soldiers. But the truth is...
Ones that are in conflicts that were based on lies and completely unwinnable. Go ahead. Anyways, what you were saying?
And I purposely went over there to try to, cheer people up. And in the end, probably cheer myself up a little bit.
Yeah.
It was the best crowds ever. I highly recommend it, Mark.
Well,
they would love you.
What's interesting is there's a couple things that stand out in your story. First of all, that your buddy from film school actually had to tell you to buy a video camera. So you guys were both doing...
He had a good idea.
And as far as people being...
I didn't go there to make a movie. I went there to do the
show. Who else? I'm being condescending, and I don't want to do that. Who else on the show with you?
Drew Carey. Kathy Kinney from his show.
Yeah.
And Blake Clark from all the Adam
Blake
Sandler.
Clark, how are you?
Guy?
I'm a Vietnam vet.
He survived two tours of Vietnam and parts in six Adam Sandler movies. he had a very emotional turn.
I bet.
Over the trip, and it's all in the film.
And what was that around, just in terms of, how does he feel about Vietnam? Maybe I should get him in here to talk about it.
He'd be a great guest. He has a lot of mixed feelings.
I imagine.
He talks in the film about when he was a soldier, the USO was the only friends the soldiers had because the public back, didn't support the soldiers in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys get that. I think there was some jealousy. Blake went in with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And when he actually went out and met the soldiers, guys, your crew right here, if we switched outfits, If we put on Army uniforms, believe it or not, we would look a lot like what the regular Army looks like. We're so used to seeing the Marines and Fahrenheit and, you know, like all hotheads and stuff like that. But the regular Army, the reserves, they're not like that.
So you didn't have, there was no political agenda in this and there was no politics. This was just strictly about entertaining the troops.
This was strictly for me, before it was even that, it was about an adventure, about seeing something as an eyewitness.
Yeah.
Didn't have a big opinion on it.
Did you interact with any locals?
Sure. Met Iraqi people and Iraqi translators and bellhops.
What was that like?
It was great. You know, it was mostly the language of comedy, trying to just, you know, like a tumbler, making my way through Iraq.
Did you see Albert Brooks's comedy in the Muslim world?
I haven't seen it.
It's not very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you find that you were able to make Iraqis laugh? Anymore?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How
was a scene
you
in the
that?
Movie where I'm in the Al Rashid Hotel. A day later in the movie, it gets mortared by insurgents.
Yeah.
It's in the green zone in Baghdad. They lobbed sort of a test run for what they did to Wolfowitz like 5 weeks later when they scared the crap out of him. I don't know if you remember that. They killed a lieutenant colonel. But while we were there, they basically mortared the same sort of side of the hotel. And I'm talking to these bellhops. There's six guys.
Yeah.
And I'm teasing them about when Colin Powell came through and how he's a lousy tipper and this and that. And you know, they got a big kick out of it. They recognized sort of Drew Carey, and I goofed on that a little bit. And it's one of the best scenes in the movie is me talking to an Iraqi translator. You know, they don't give their real name, and I talked to him for a couple of minutes. He's teaching me some words in his language, and suddenly I mention that I'm Jewish, and it's end of conversation. It's a very fascinating dynamic between the Jews. I had lunch there with seven Jewish soldiers on Rosh Hashanah.
Really?
And in one of Saddam's birthday palaces in Tikrit, his hometown.
Were you there for Yom Kippur?
I was not.
Are you going back for Passover? I want to think of a Seder together.
I like to have Tishu B'Av in Fallujah.
Yeah.
I can't even say Tishu B'Av in Fallujah.
Maybe you could have a Sukkot in Baghdad.
I highly recommend, if there's any chance to support the USO, non-political way to really be patriotic. USO.org. It's a great organization.
Well, I imagine they'd have to be appreciative. I certainly don't have any experience with that, and I think I'm probably I don't know if that's true. I'm a little too reactionary in my comedy.
But you know what? It gives you
when
as soon as you're an eyewitness, Mark. You know, it gives you a little bit more of a right to speak out, a little bit more of a voice in what's going on. You've seen it.
Yeah.
So a guy like you should do whatever he could to get to Walter Reed or.
I wouldn't mind doing that, but I just wonder in terms of having an experience in Iraq. I mean, did you were pretty well taken care of. You were in a secured situation.
My hotel was mortared. You know, it was a sacrifice on all the part of the performers. Not all trips are like that, but
That's not true.
They couldn't even take care of the comedians.
I did a gig in Ohio that was very similar. And it
must have been at college with Rich Voss.
Rich Voss, how's he doing?
They can't keep him.
How's Rich Voss doing?
He's good. He's married.
He married Bonnie McFarlane.
Yeah.
How do you like that? So where can we see this film of yours?
You can see it next week. It'll be at the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas.
Will it be at your house on Friday if I come over?
No, I don't know. Watch TV on Fridays, but on Saturday after. No, I'm just
maybe
kidding.
Saturday afternoon I'll come watch.
Yeah, you can come by. You could come by and see it any time, but everybody else will have to wait till Memorial
is
Day.
Is your buddy mad at me? I'm getting the feeling he's looking at me like he's giving me a dirty look.
No,
are you mad at
Kai
me?
Is an awesome guy.
Buddy.
He's an artist. He's helping me with my film. And
I do. I project personalities onto people when I feel insecure, and I just assume
he's
that
he's concentrating.
He is.
Yeah, he's very focused.
Yeah. So now it's gonna.
It's gonna be on Showtime.
Showtime. That's
a Memorial Day. What a great day to support the troops.
That is a good day for a premiere of a show about humoring the troops and being a
Patriot Act, the Jeffrey Ross home movie.
All right. So, would you go back? I mean, are you going to go back? Because I know they do these things a lot.
You know, unfortunately, I think I have to go back. It's like it's going to go on forever. It's a nightmare. So, yeah, I'll go back. I'll go back for the right reasons this time. Not to make a movie, not to see what it's all about, but to really. You know, we all say we support the troops, but it's so hard to actually do it. Other than, I mean, putting a ribbon on your car doesn't really help anybody. So this is the little bit that I could do.
I wish the government would support the troops. And that's, ultimately.
That's another thing, Mark. Until I went over there, I confused the government with the military. And it's two different things.
Right.
People don't realize that. It's totally different.
Yep.
Soldiers do their job with no questions asked.
Mm-hmm.
Where the government does whatever they want.
That's right. And they take advantage of these guys a lot of times. So let's ease it up. What do you got coming up in terms of comedy?
I'm going to be probably, I don't know.
You don't got any big plans? You have any big shows
actually,
coming up?
Tracy going to Morgan Vegas? And I. Tracy Morgan, remember Tracy?
Yeah, I do remember from Saturday Night Live. Didn't he get himself in a little trouble lately?
He had a DUI the other day, but he's okay. I'm going to see him in the morning.
He's okay? What about the people he hit? I'm kidding. Go ahead.
No, he didn't hurt anybody. He's a happy drunk.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah,
him and I have a show coming out.
Happy drugs get DUIs. Maybe a happy drug should not get in the car. What do you think?
He probably shouldn't be driving too much.
So you got
him. I love him, but he does like time travel in his head. He doesn't need to be behind the wheel of a car.
I'll tell you, sometimes I talk to that guy, and as funny as he can be occasionally, I can get into a conversation with him within seconds. I'm like, where are we? What are you talking about?
He makes
about
you look here? Stable, right.
I don't know where the hell he goes, and I don't know if it's liquor or what, but boy, he'll go.
But he was like that when he was a kid. You know, we remember when he was 15 years ago, he was the same way.
I don't remember him 15 years ago.
He used to walk around with a twirly hat on. He was crazy.
Oh, that's right. He had the twirly hat. I remember Chappelle from like 16 years ago when he was 12 and he started doing comedy.
Yeah.
I remember Tracy Morgan now with the twirly hat. That's right. Isn't it weird to see everybody getting older? Isn't it wild?
Yeah, I feel young.
Yeah, well, I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, but, you know, comedians are ageless.
Yeah.
Comedians are ageless.
Yeah, they are. They are ageless as long as they remain funny. I mean, that's the one thing, weird thing. It's like you keep pushing your barometer of success up, you know. It used to be like, now it's like Louis Black. Like, I am like, hey, he didn't break till he was 50-something. You know, still got a shot at breaking
there's
big,
no,
right?
There's no rules, man.
That's right, man. No rules, dude.
Look, so, we're talking about Shelley Berman, you know what I mean?
There's always...
Comedians, they're not like rock stars. They're not like, even writers have it hard. Comedians, we can keep doing it.
Just got to be funny and stay topical. Jim, you want to play us out here? You want to play me and Jeff? Thanks for coming, Jeff Ross.
Congratulations on your new show, everybody.
Thank you, and congratulations on you being you and your new film.
Thank you.
It premieres at South by Southwest, and it's going to be on Showtime in May. It's called Patriot Act. Our guest has been Jeff Ross, and now Jim Earle will take us out with a song.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mark Maron comes to me, speaking words of wisdom on his show. Mark Maron.
Very original.
Mark Maron. Maron. Speaking words of wisdom on his show.
Can you open for me at Guantanamo Bay in a couple of weeks?
Shut up.
Stay tuned for 3 minutes of crap. That's right. Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next.
Now he banked in a running jumper with 2 seconds on the clock. It's Mark Hoops Maron.
That's right. They call me Hoops. Let's talk to this guy. He's been hanging on for a long time before we do the short-term news. What's up, Matt? You still there? Matt?
Yeah.
What's on your mind, man?
I just was thinking, first off, that was a great segment.
Jeff.
But I called in before that just to say that, I'm 50, so I'm a few years older than you.
Yeah.
And you maybe missed the part about rock and roll was a rebellion against parents.
That's right.
And, punk tried to be, but it didn't quite make it because a lot of people could listen to punk.
Right.
And then they came up with gangster rap, and all the parents hated that.
Yeah, you got kids?
Yeah.
They listen to the gangster rap? They're driving you crazy?
Yeah, they sure did. They're grown now, and now they're starting to listen to other stuff.
All right, but you made it through. I'm glad. Thanks for calling, Matt.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah, well, I guess that makes sense. All right, here we go, folks. A lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron Short Order News. Federal health officials say a second vaccine for bird flu is being developed to help combat the rapidly mutating virus. The World Health Organization has reported 94 bird flu deaths since 2003. To put that into perspective, that's nearly half the number of people killed each year by flying NASCAR debris and pyrotechnics at heavy metal shows. The Supreme Court ruled unanimously that colleges accepting federal funds must allow military recruiters on campus. The Pentagon hailed this as the most important victory for military presence on American colleges since the National Guard forced 67 bullets into the student body at Kent State. Ratings for last night's Oscar telecast dropped 10% from last year, making it the second least watched Oscar night ever. In retrospect, the Academy learned the folly of nominating movies no one saw and hiring a host that only college kids and six newspaper editors watch. Yeah, you like that one, huh, Jim? And that's Mark Maron's short order news for tonight. You like that, huh, Jim?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was very easy.
Yeah? So, yeah, so, Jim.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm listening.
You tell Heather that her and I share this saving of the snails.
She's very concerned about the snails.
And when you go outside, don't step on any of those damn snails.
I won't.
They don't have feelings, but they're snails. They're so cute.
You know why I won't step on them?
Why?
Good eating.
Oh, yeah, you can't eat snails. You don't eat meat. I've got a thing for animals. You know, my wife yelled at me yesterday. She just kept yelling at me, saying, "Mark, the cat is not a person." And I said, "If only it was."
That's right. They only have little brains the size of walnuts.
I'm going to go eat some of Jill's cookies. She sent a bunch of cookies.
You know, Mark, I thought you got off easy tonight with Jeff Ross. I think if this show makes it all the way to your birthday in September, we're going to really roast you good.
Okay. All right. Every time I've tried to roast people, it always comes out too angry. Tomorrow, Eddie Pepitone is going to be on. He's also a good target.
What do you got there, Jim?
Yeah, I've got another joke, but no, I'm not going to do it. Forget it.
No, bring it, bring
you
it,
said
bring
they
it.
Sucked.
We've got 20 seconds.
You said I can't do it. You said they sucked.
Jim, please.
15 seconds.
Your mom's so ugly that vultures fly over her head with one wing over their eyes.
I'm calling my mom. You know what I mean? I'm calling your mom. I'm going to ask her what the hell happened.
Oh, thanks. Go ahead. My mom died 6 years ago.
She
thanks
did?
For bringing that up. Woo, boy, what a note to end a radio show on.
No kidding. Thanks for the buzzkill, Jim Buzzkill Earl. Wow, just let it go. Good night, sheeple.